fellow travelers, and welcome to Adventures in Security, episode 34 for July 29th, 2006. And I'm your host, Tom Olczak. This is a weekly podcast published each weekend. You can find the information covered in our episodes at blogs.ittoolbox.com/security/adventures. If you're interested in commenting on what you hear or about topics you'd like us to talk about, please send email to podcasts@adventuresinsecurity.com. This is the fifth in a series in which we look at web application security. I'm using the OWASP Top 10 list as the basis for the series. Over the weeks that we're going to cover the OWASP Top 10, we're going to look at the challenges facing organizations that are increasing their use of web technologies, the top 10 vulnerabilities typically found in those organizations, and ways to manage the resulting risk. If you missed the first four episodes, be sure to visit adventuresinsecurity.com to catch up. In this week's episode, we're going to cover the fourth and fifth of the top 10 vulnerabilities, cross-site scripting, and buffer overflows. And before you run screaming from the building, because you're going to hear just one more person gabbing about buffer overflows, I think you'll be surprised about what I have to say about just how much risk buffer overflows causes to your organization. It's probably not as much as you've been led to believe. And yes, I'm back from vacation. And before I went on vacation, I loaned my mic and my mixer and my headphones to a friend to use while I was gone, and I asked that I be sure to get those back by this weekend so that I could use them for this podcast, and guess what? I don't got them. So I'm back to using the headset that I used, headset with mic, that I used when I first started my podcasting, and so just bear with me, and next week we'll have the quality back where I really like it to be. The cross-site scripting vulnerability is similar to other web app security weaknesses caused by unvalidated input. The primary difference lies in where the malicious scripts run. In other attack types, malicious scripts target the system that hosts the vulnerability or the vulnerable web app. But in cross-site scripting, the scope of the attack widens. All client workstations that access the application are potential targets. This not only puts the entire user base at risk, it also exposes the hosting organization to questions about its ability to provide secure web services. In this episode, I'm going to look at two principal ways attackers might use RSS to launch an attack against an end user population: inserting scripts into form fields and HTML tag code injection. Inserting a script into a form field is a method that's used by attackers to get script into forms and other services used by a large number of users. So, for example, an attacker might enter the following when posting to an online forum. Between two script tags, begin script and end script, you might type something like alert and then a text string, hello world. Well, when an unsuspecting user opens the forum post, this script will run on the user's workstation. The result is the harmless text display, but what if the script included instead code to display a permissions error message, prompt the user for his password, and then email the password to the attacker's server? The second type of attack is code injection into an HTML tag. This allows unexpected code execution that might retrieve the session cookie from a victim's workstation and email it to the attacker's server. The injected scripts are not typically run on the host server. Instead, a host system that doesn't adequately validate input from outside entities will receive the malicious code and store it in a web page, database, or some other storage media for later on-demand distribution to client systems. When a user requests information that's delivered via an infected page, her workstation will also receive the malicious script. Since the scripts are delivered via web pages from a trusted web application server, the victim's browser will run the malicious code upon receipt. So how do we defend against cross-site scripting? Well, in the code injection examples that we just went over, a simple scan for angle brackets and a deletion of those found would have rendered the injected code impotent. Now, if you go to my website, adventuresinsecurity.com, you can actually pull up the paper upon which this episode is based, and you'll see the couple of scripting examples in that paper, and you'll see what I'm talking about. The angle brackets are actually around the tag, the script tags. If those are ripped out, then the browser on the client station doesn't recognize that the script as script, and it won't execute. This might seem like a very simple approach, but it appears to be the best defense against cross-site scripting attacks. Nearly every single cross-site scripting vulnerability that the authors of hacking of the book Hacking Exposed have come across involved a failure to strip angle brackets from input or failure to encode such brackets in output. And again, that's from the book Hacking Exposed, which I recommend everyone pick up. And I believe it's in the fifth edition. And it has just about everything you ever wanted to know about how to hack into systems and how to prevent that from occurring. It's a very valuable book for security professionals trying to get their minds wrapped around what hackers are trying to do to their networks. So again, it comes down to the problem of unvalidated input. In other words, keep the bad stuff off your servers. It's important to remember that input doesn't just come from client workstations. It can come from databases and other servers. All input into a web application must be filtered to ensure the delivery of clean content to your user population. From the client side, there are some additional steps you can take just in case your site or sites your users visit contain one or more exploitable unvalidated input vulnerabilities. First, encourage your users to read their email in plain text. Second, ensure that a personal firewall and up-to-date antivirus software is running on each workstation, and configure the firewall to restrict outbound connections. And finally, if your web applications set cookies and if your users access them with a current version of Internet Explorer, you can use Microsoft's HTTP-only cookies setting in the browser, and this will help prevent scripts from accessing cookies directly. I discussed only a small subset of the threats and the possible defenses associated with cross-site scripting. My intent is to provide enough information to raise your awareness about this vulnerability. To truly protect your environment and your web application users, you should conduct your own research and ensure your development and end-user device support teams are trained in cross-site scripting defense best practices. Now we're going to move on to buffer overflows, and I can't go into as much detail as I did in the paper on which this episode is based. If you want to get into more detail about how buffer overflows work, see a couple examples of how they can be manipulated to cause system crashes or to cause programs or malicious code to execute, I encourage you to go to adventuresinsecurity.com, go to the security papers page, and pull up the paper, and you'll get some more detail on the information we're going to cover here. So before we jump into specifics on buffer overflows and web apps, I want to take a minute to go over buffer overflows in general. Buffer overflows can occur when more data is written to memory than was allocated by the program. In other words, the programmer was responsible for properly managing memory and made a common error. It doesn't take much of an overflow to impact the system. In fact, as little as one byte of data can cause a security incident. The scary thing is, buffer overflow vulnerabilities are one of the most popular targets of criminal hackers. So I'm going to cover three common overflow types. There are more, but the fundamental causes and effects are the same. The first one is the stack overflow. The stack is an area of memory where your computer stores information that won't fit in its registers. There are different types of stacks created depending on the applications and the operating system executing on your system. And what an attacker will do is it will write, will input data either through a user interface or through a database or through any number of methods. And if the application does not properly check size and data type, that information, when it's written to the stack, can overwrite one or more stack locations, which can cause the system to either crash or it can cause the system to jump to a location where there is malicious code that the attacker wants to execute. The next one is the heap overflow. When a program retrieves a large amount of data for processing, a portion of memory known as the heap is allocated to handle the loaded data. In low-level languages like C and C++, the programmer is responsible for ensuring the proper amount of memory is set aside. If the loaded data is larger than the allocated heap memory, the system could crash. And finally, we have the integer overflow. When adding two integers, the result occasionally exceeds the memory allocated for the result. An example would be if you added two integers like 10 and 5, they equals 15. 15 can fit into an 8-bit space just fine. But if you have a larger number, two larger integers that would equal like 400, which requires more than 8 bits to represent the value, then you're going to have problems. So the integer overflow is not necessarily a good vehicle for outside attacks, but it can affect the integrity of your data, so it's important to watch for those. So let's now look specifically at the danger of buffer overflows to web applications. There are three principal factors that determine the vulnerability of a web app environment to buffer overflow exploits. The first is programming languages used. The second are the vulnerabilities associated with underlying infrastructure. And for the purposes of this episode, infrastructure includes operating systems and other housekeeping utilities and tools. And finally, programming processes and techniques. So let's take a look at each one of those in turn. The first, programming languages used. In order for programmers to inadvertently introduce buffer overflow vulnerabilities into your custom web apps, they must use languages that rely on them to allocate memory and define data types. In other words, humans have to do this. The development environment will not handle those tasks. But development environments like Java and .NET don't allow programmers that much latitude. This makes applications written in Java or .NET all but immune to buffer overflow issues. There's a table that's available from the Open Web Application Security Project that lists the most commonly used languages or development environments and will tell you whether or not they're considered safe. Now, overall, only low-level languages like C, C++, assembly, and in many cases, authors that I've seen have included C Sharp, they are unsafe. But applications such as Java, .NET, Perl, Python, Ruby, and even COBOL are considered safe when it comes to the potential to introduce buffer overflow vulnerabilities into web applications. Now, this doesn't mean that using .NET technology, for example, makes you completely immune. Errors in the programming language or development environment itself might introduce one or two overflow problems. So for this reason, make sure you're always using the most current release. Next, we move on to vulnerabilities associated with the underlying infrastructure. So now that you've begun to feel a little safer and a little less paranoid because your web apps are all written in Java, all right, not so fast, you're not on the high ground just yet. Those reasonably safe web apps have to run in operating systems, which in turn run in a network environment full of services and utilities that are probably still written completely or partially in C, C++, or another low-level language. Some of the weak points in your buffer overflow defenses might include Windows, Linux, Apache, IIS, MySQL, Oracle, and one of thousands of other tools and applications that help deliver web services to your users. So consider not using any product provided by a vendor who doesn't react quickly to announcements about buffer overflow vulnerabilities. And of course, keep your applications and operating systems patched. And finally, we come to programming processes and techniques. In the final analysis, it still comes down to how aware you and your development team are about the proper management of input into your web application environment. One common mistake organizations make is relying on the safety of an environment like .NET while developing applications that call external tools and applications that are written in unsafe, low-level languages like C. The primary reason many utilities and resource-intensive applications are still written in low-level languages is to take advantage of faster execution times. Yes, you might have to give up a little response time when you move to a higher-level language. You have to decide whether the reduction in risk is worth the trade-off in performance. If you must maintain higher performance levels, consider selecting products from vendors who demonstrate their processes, both manual and automated, for identifying and eliminating buffer overflow vulnerabilities. You know, this has always been a reason people use to not move to languages like Java or environments like .NET, but with today's improved performance on hardware, that excuse really doesn't hold a lot of water any longer. So what does this all mean from the perspective of somebody trying to figure out the risk of buffer overflows to their web apps? Well, although the risk still exists that your custom web application might fall victim to a buffer overflow attack, it isn't very likely. This is supported by the fact that the Web Application Security Consortium has been unable to list any media reports that describe a successful buffer overflow attack against a web app. According to Jeremiah Grossman, the founder of the Application Security Consortium, organizations are better off focusing on the vulnerabilities that are known successful targets or weaknesses in web apps, and these include cross-site scripting, SQL injection, authentication or authorization loopholes, and business logic flaws. But before I close this topic, I want to leave you with a list of things you can do to protect yourself from buffer overflow vulnerabilities, no matter where they might be found or potentially introduced into your environment. And most of them are a good idea, even if you're not worried about buffer overflows. So first, check your buffer accesses by using safe string and buffer handling functions. Use operating system level buffer overflow defenses like the compiler switch /gs. Keep your development environments up to date. More defenses are added with every release, and the vendors are on top of this or trying very hard to keep ahead of the curve on buffer overflows. Keep your OS and other underlying software infrastructure patched. Use high-level programming languages and development environments whenever possible. When using low-level languages, make sure to audit the code for potential data type or memory allocation errors. Consider non-executable stack technology, and this is potentially helpful in preventing certain types of stack overflow attacks. However, it can introduce compatibility issues. Using non-executable stack technology will break programs that are written in languages like Java that compile code on the fly and will most likely crash when they encounter this kind of a stack protection. And then finally, and very important, train your developers. Make sure they ask the right questions when writing applications or selecting tools. Well, that's it for this week. And I just wanted to let everyone know that this podcast has been selected as the featured podcast of the month by Podcast Pup. So go ahead and visit them. And they've been nice enough to show their support for this community. Hopefully it's a community that listens to this podcast, and I'd appreciate it if you'd support Podcast Pup as well. I'd also like to remind everyone that my book is at Amazon.com. The book is Just Enough Security, and go ahead and go up and take a look and tell me what you think. And that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to cover injection flaws, and until then, be careful what you click.